Welcome to the Business of Learning, the Learning Leaders Podcast from TrainingIndustry.com.
Hello and welcome to the Business of Learning, the Training Industry Podcast. I'm Scott Rutherford, Director of Marketing at TrainingIndustry.com.
And I'm Taryn Aish, Editor at TrainingIndustry.com. The learner experience has become a bit of an industry buzzword coming to us from the software development industry's concept of the user experience, or UX. But what does it really mean to provide a good learner experience?
And not just what does it mean, but then how do we go about creating a good learner experience? And importantly, how do we know what's good? So to dig into this topic today, we have two industry thought leaders. Pleased to introduce them. First, Sam Herring is Vice President and General Manager of Intrepid by VitalSource. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
And Dr. Tom Tonkin, is Principal of Thought Leadership and Advisory Services at Cornerstone On Demand. Hi, Tom.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the basics here. When we talk about learner experience, what do we mean? How would you describe it? Sam, let's begin with you.
Sure. Thanks. You know, I think the real change here is about putting the learner at the center of the overall learning experience. In the past, with technology-enabled learning, we've really focused on the delivery of content to an audience. And now we're really re-envisioning how people interact with content, the span of their learning journey over time. We think about application and concepts like action learning that have been with us for some time, but we think of that digitally. We think of how learning is amplified in the experience with peers, with experts, with instructors. And we also think about the personalization of learning to that learner's individual experience. In other words, we're bringing the learner's context to the content.
That makes sense. Tom, would you have anything to add to that?
I think the conversation is really going to revolve around a parallel notion that the learner is really the customer. And much of the nomenclature that we're going to borrow from customer experience will fall in line with what we'll be talking about, learner experience.
I hesitate to call the learner experience a buzzword because that makes it sound like, you know, it's a not necessarily here to stay, and I think, you know, it might be, but for lack of a better word, such a popular buzzword is probably misused a lot. So what are some common myths about the learner experience?
You know, one of the things that I think is a misunderstanding is that content is at the center. Content is most important. And then sometimes that content needs to be of professional quality. And it really doesn't. We find that oftentimes authenticity increases with low production value, quick production value content, say content that's captured in the field, you know, from someone who's widely regarded as an expert, subject matter expert. We learn by video, by YouTube. This past weekend, I had to take down my kid's trampoline, and I was really struggling with how to take apart these springs that, without damaging myself. And sure enough, with a YouTube video that was produced by a guy in his backyard in Minnesota somewhere, I was able to become an expert on this in a matter of minutes. So thinking about production value is really about the expertise and the credibility and where that expertise comes from.
So yeah, obviously, if the content isn't on point, then nothing else matters, arguably. But how it's presented, also, it's more about the presentation just not being an obstacle to that, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And making it, of course, the example I cited with video is kind of having it be another aspect of this is making it easily accessible to the learner, not having to make them pound through, you know, multiple clicks in a system or break the context of their overall learning flow or their workflow to go find something. We've all had that very frustrating experience, but making it incredibly easy to access at the moment of need.
So what are some best practices then if obviously I think our audience is familiar with designing learning experiences probably broadly, a little bit of a self-selection dynamic that happens with this podcast, I think. But what are best practices then to design a learner experience that's outstanding? Tom, would you want to take the lead on that one?
Yeah, I will. as I mentioned earlier about the paradigm that we'll sort of borrow from customer service to learning experience, or customer experience to learning experience, is not much different. I think, first of all, Sam hit it on the head here earlier when he talks about putting the learner in the center. Up until now, we've had content and functionality and process be the center of much of our design. In this case, some of the best practices in the learner experience world is really borrowing from what is going on in other aspects of technology. For example, design thinking is very prevalent now, which has an empathetic view in anything that you design. The fact that we're talking about empathy in a design thinking paradigm suggests that, again, the person, the learner, the customer, whatever, is in the center of the process. And so to design a good learning experience, you could borrow directly from design thinking that's been around for some time that came to us from product development. So I would say that's one of the best practices that we can employ here.
So in practice, I mean, could you give me an example of where you've seen that work effectively?
The one way that I see, again, I'm going to borrow from design thinking and look at things like the customer journey map. Okay. So in that particular area, you look at, again, the customer experience, and you would follow a customer and see how they're journeying through your process, in this case, a learning experience. You know, how do I sit down? How do I log in? How am I consuming? The speed of the content, is the content on point? Is it short enough? Is it relevant, like Sam's trampoline experience, that he needed it on time at that moment to get work done? And as we traverse all of these different areas, are we soliciting back the sentiment of the learner in each of these points? I would suggest that if you are looking at an entire experience, now I'm going to abstract that to a higher level, whether it be a learning experience or some customer experience, usually you have a set of touch points that you have. For example, maybe there's 30 different touch points in the system, you know, where you're actually logging in, or you're creating content, whatever you're doing. It only takes two or three bad touch points to really color the sentiment of that experience. And that's the good news and the bad news. I mean, the bad news is it only 2 points, but the good news is you only have to fix 2 points to get it to be a good learner experience.
Yeah, at the core of all of that is you know, sort of the iterative, you know, constant. If we're applying the design thinking model, it's data and measurement and cycling through that is sort of core to that thought process. So when we're talking about a good learner experience, how do you identify what's important to measure so you can be focusing and iterating on the right things?
Terrific. It's funny you asked that. We were just having a conversation on our management team meeting just now on this very, very topic. And you know, some of the things are, motherhood and apple pie. You start with your business measures, of course, and the whole point of why you're creating a learner experience to begin with, presumably has to do with achieving some kind of performance objective for the business. So it always is going to start there. Whether that's revenue up for a sales organization, or close rate, or shortening a cycle time for onboarding, so that is not new for digital learning experiences that we have today. But that is the place to start. Then the question is, what is the access to the experiential learner data tell you about that? And that's where things get really exciting, because in the old models of digital learning, we had completion and test scores, right? And today, now we have this incredibly rich set of behavioral analytics that we can make sense of. So, what videos were consumed? What was the what percentage of that was consumed? How are people progressing through an open learning pathway? What badges have they collected? How many likes are you getting on content? What kind of discussion, what kind of questions are really eliciting a lot of discussions and discussion boards? Are people finishing their assignments? what kind of feedback are they getting? I mean, I can go on and on and on, but you get a sense that this is like way richer than your traditional self-paced e-learning or even your synchronous e-learning, where you just don't have the number of data points that you can link back to. So when the power is when you can marry up that engagement data with the business data, so in some real BI tools, then the real magic starts to come alive, and you start to be able to see why and how you're moving the performance needle, and what levers you can pull on the learning experience to improve the outcomes on your performance and business data.
Now, you both represent companies with learning platforms, and you know, we hear a lot about learning experience platforms. So, what exactly is a learning experience platform, and how is it different from, you know, more traditional platforms that we're used to seeing?
This is Tom. I'll get this going. So I'm just going to borrow from what Sam just said. In the past, right, we were more concerned about completion criteria and consumption numbers and loads. Lends itself very much to a management system. And so if those are the metrics you believe at the time, which, by the way, there's value in them. I don't want to diminish them, but there's value in those. But if those are the metrics you believe in, then you need a systematic way of collecting them, hence the LMS. Sam then mentioned other types of metrics that we're moving into, you know, the likes, the sentiment that goes with the consumption, the effectiveness of the just-in-time learning. New set of metrics, right, require a new platform to support it. So the LMS and those metrics don't necessarily go away. They're supportive of that. But we see the learning experience platform sort of sit on top of that, that now support these new, more modern, more business-oriented metrics.
Yeah, and to build on what Tom said, which I completely agree with, we see the traditional learning systems as the place that the learner goes to get to the learning experience. So you traditionally register for or find a learning program through your LMS, but you aren't learning in the LMS. It's getting you to the point of learning, wherever that may be, self-paced e-learning, virtual classroom session, or a digital, more robust digital learning experience. Within the learning experience layer, we see different types and different specializations of applications. So you may see applications that focus on helping learners find learning in or outside their organization at the moment of need, depending on what their interests or either immediate or career interests are. And then what we focus on at Intrepid is the creation and delivery of rich learning programs. So think of collaborative, cohort-driven learning experiences that allow for a deeply engaging learning experience at scale. And of course, there are other flavors of platforms in that learning experience layer, all of which are, at the end of the day, like Tom and I have been talking about, focusing on the learner first and bringing that consumer grade digital experience to learning.
All right. So, assuming that, you know, an organization's taken all that into consideration and has decided, you know, a learning experience platform, this type of platform, is what we want for our organization, what questions should they ask vendors and potential partners when they're picking a platform?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I think one of the first things is that the orientation of the platform as it pertains to the learner. It goes back to something, Taryn, that you said earlier about this being a buzzword, right? So our job here is to snatch learning experience away from the jaws of buzzword land and save it, because it could slip into that. And what happens with buzzwords, you end up adding all sorts of traits and characteristics and make it a stereotypical buzzword that just is not true. In the sense of things like micro learning, there's that's another new buzzword that's going on out there, and it's getting loaded up with some truths and some half truths. I think one of the things that I would suggest at looking at a platform is number one, is it really learner centric? as we've mentioned, you could see where the theme of this conversation is. I think the other aspect of the learner experience and where it was born is we kind of want to look at a little bit of the history of what benefit it brings. Anybody who's been in the learning world for any amount of time and certainly has learning research would understand that probably the best way to teach anybody anything is if you are able to connect it to something that they already know. It's clear and it's faster for absorption. We can get into the neuroscience of it, but I won't. Basically, it's if I can piggyback off of something you already know, can I have that adoption rate go much, much faster? For example, if I were to try to describe to you what a zebra was, I would say something like, what's a horse with vertical black and white stripes? And you'd say, okay, well, I know what a horse is and I know what black and white stripes are, so I can envision what that is. As opposed if I were to describe it, well, it's a four-legged mammal that's got ears and it's got, right? You start getting real complex and you have to sort of start from scratch. Same thing here with the learning experience. The reason learning experiences are getting so much traction is because how do we consume content that's outside the workplace? Like, for example, Netflix and some of these other content consuming experiences, if you will. If I go home and I am able to browse or choose movies, videos that I want to watch on Netflix or any of these types of applications, why do I have to go back to work and learn some other paradigm? Shouldn't it be easier if I could just have that similar experience? Therefore, my adoption rate would increase, my learning curve would decrease. And so what is the paradigm, right, that we're looking at to be able to increase that adoption of use?
Sam, anything to add there?
I would say three things. First, I would say, what is the DNA of this of the providers you're considering? It's no secret that there's an enormous amount of capital going into the space right now. I just read some data that said that 2017 there were over $9 billion invested in learning technology worldwide. So there's a lot of new entrants, some coming in from academic backgrounds and so on. So really think about what's the DNA of this organization. Do they have experience serving your audience of adult corporate learners? Because that really flows through a lot of the capabilities that organization is going to have. I mean, second, from a product perspective, as we've been talking about, Tom and I've been talking about, what is the ease and elegance of that learner experience? And equally, what is that experience for the administrator or the author? Can they easily create these experiences in the platform? And then finally, I wouldn't underestimate the power of a strong partner with services. Do they have strong enablement services? Can they help you actually get programs up and built and off the ground and launched? Because what we often see is it's more than just configuration and teaching. What customers are really looking for who are new to learning experience platforms, irrespective of what the platform is, they're looking for a new way to design for the modern learner. It's like going from analog to digital. And so they're looking for, customers are often looking for a partner who can be that guide and help them at a higher level of value than the platform per se. It's really helping them go modern, and who has that experience? And you really need to be looking for that from what we've seen.
Yeah, chasing that thought just for a second, actually, because I was going to steer us in the direction of, well, if we're in agreement, I think we're probably in violent agreement that improving the learner experience is something that we want to pursue. But the sort of the care and support of the administrator, of the learning professional, is of course key to that. So, and you sort of referenced, Sam, I think you sort of got you referenced in this direction a second ago. What sort of scaffolding or support or skills or training does the learning manager need in order to deliver a stronger learner experience? Is that building on, sort of core skills of instructional design and becoming more of a data scientist, or what's you know, what's needed to get from where maybe we collectively have been to where we should be moving?
Sure, I can get that started. It's good. It's a great question, and one we think about a lot. You know, we're actually building a certification program right now, and really really grappling with that, not only from product specifics, but again, as I was mentioning, from that overall design perspective. But I think there are absolutely new disciplines that need to be considered here. We look for people on our own team, in fact, with strong user experience background, strong design thinking background, like Tom mentioned, strong empathy for the learner and the end user, strong data orientation. There's a bit of unlearning that needs to happen from the traditional linear approaches to, you know, ADDIE driven approaches to learning. So it's much more akin to agile processes and software development than waterfall. And so I think learning has often been much more of a waterfall exercise coming out of the ADDIE types of models. So underneath all that, these behaviors of curiosity, of willingness to try totally new things, versus you know, obviously behaviors like rigidity, and I've done this before, and there's one way to do it. You know, so that kind of openness, understanding of social networks. So these are all aspects that people need to learn and be part of it. What we find is our most successful customers are those that come in wanting to disrupt, wanting to try things new, questioning the status quo, wanting to put their mark on something that is new and different, and that are not bound to the way things have always been done.
Tom, would you like to jump in on that question?
Yeah, I'd like to be a little controversial on this one. if we're all in violent agreement of this is the right thing to pursue, would we also be in violent agreement that this is here to stay? Like, we're not going to go back. Like, this isn't a fad, or this isn't a period in time. We believe that the experience will then develop potentially into a better, bigger, and then maybe something else in the future. If that's the case, then I would challenge the organizational concept of a learning manager. Is a learning manager no longer needed, or should we start looking at learning experience developers, very similar to some of the jobs that are changing in other industries? For example, if you go to Amazon and they're looking for a culinary engineer, right? Somebody that can take meals but package them in such a way that they can be shipped. So there's this morphing of jobs. I think that the training and development world is going through that same transition, where I think the training and development professionals have to also morph into their jobs. And some of those skills will be more traditional experience skills, very similar to what you might see in an e-commerce situation. In a workflow of some kind. So we also, I am going to borrow a little bit from what's happening in learning in general by saying learning used to be sort of this side activity, right? Where you would say, okay, I'm going to do my job, and then I'm going to go and learn something, and then I come back and do my job. Well, we're seeing that morph where learning is actually happening in the workflow. Like, again, I go back to Sam's trampoline exercise he did. Imagine if that was his job, right? How would I then go about saying, well, I'm in the middle of doing something, how do I then incorporate learning in just in time in my workflow? So now learning managers or learning experience managers, whatever that next support staff will look like, will have to have those skills as to how do I merge knowledge worker, creative, empathetic type of people to be able to actually merge the learning and the work into one big workflow.
Yeah, and to have the learning happen in where it's needed, and it does speak to sort of the blurring of the lines between, you know, formal learning versus social versus informal. If we get back, if we sort of invoke 70-20-10 here for a second,
agreed.
What we're talking about is also thematically aligned with some of the thinking we've had here at Training Industry about the shifting of those lines and saying, well, really formal learning actually becomes more important in the mix as those formal learning moments, I guess, in theory, get chunked down to be closer to the moment of need. Another way perhaps to spin what you were saying.
Yeah, agreed. Let me add a little more to it. So I guess it was about 3 years ago, we had Josh Bernserbers by Deloitte gave us that infographic where they went and did some surveys and they figured out that only 1%, right, of our day is spent on learning, which again is going back, Scott, to your point about formal versus informal. That 1% was categorized as formal, meaning I walk away from my job and I do whatever. But you think of 1%, and then let's say you work an average of 40 hours, which none of us really do nowadays, but let's just go with that. That's 4.8 minutes a day to do that. Now that sounds ridiculous when you put it that way, 24 minutes a week. But yet, right, there's this emphasis that says, well, how can I fit, you know, learning in that 4.8 minutes? Well, arguably the other side of that coin says, well, maybe there's a prioritization problem there that suggests maybe we need to make that more of a priority learning. And second, something you just said, maybe some of the learning is actually being accounted for in the workflow itself. And I think sometimes when you ask people about learning, they don't consider that learning, meaning going through the work of the workflow, but yet, you know, they are.
Right. And at the end of the day, that integration, that closeness between the learning and the performance of the job, I guess, to sort of close the loop on the controversial angle here, that's what makes the training manager still important, right?
Because, correct. Yes,
we're still tasked with making sure that systemically that design happens in a way that learning affects performance outcomes.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think, and this is Sam. I think you know, it's important to be thoughtful about all the kind of the full spectrum of learning that happens. And I think we think about Bob Mosher and Conrad Goffertson's work and Five Moments of Need. You know, we are so there are, I think oftentimes we kind of default to, you know, admittedly my example with YouTube, which is kind of like I need something quick, right? But we think about there are different ways that we support learners when they're learning something for the first time versus when they're, you know, in that the moment of that performance support versus when they want to go deeper to become an expert versus when something has changed in the process. So I think sometimes I feel like we get, there are conversations, not this conversation, that can get somewhat facile about digital learning and about how everything is performance support, everything is a YouTube video, everything's a Google search. And of course, that's not the case. We don't develop mastery over a domain of complex work. We don't become, you know, a leader who leads leaders by watching a YouTube video, right? So I think there's some precision that needs to be injected into the conversation about the role that learning manager to oversee that architecture of learning that happens in the organization and to help and foster the learning moments that happen to meet those variety of learning needs in the organization.
So in other words, you were able to do what you needed to do with the trampoline, but I shouldn't come to you for all my trampoline needs.
I'm not a trampoline expert.
I think this is going to stick, Sam. I'm sorry.
Please don't come. We decided not to give away the trampoline because I did more research and learning that says, like, you may still be liable for that trampoline if it gets out to the next user. So, yeah, exactly, Taryn.
All right. Well, Sam, Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. I do want to give you one last moment to share any final thoughts that you have with us before we wrap up.
Yeah, this is Sam. I'll just say, you know, what I like to say a lot on these conversations on the topic is as people are kind of sticking their foot in the water, Go big, go bold, try some new things. Take one of your biggest, thorniest challenges, a global learning challenge, a high-skill learning challenge, a high-stakes learning challenge, and try some new things. That's where we really see organizations being successful and moving the needle. You know, life's too short for kind of small ball tests and pilots and so on. And it's testing smart, testing big. That's what we've really seen organizations move the needle with new learning experience approaches.
Yeah, this is Tom. I guess I live my life by quotes and just to guide my ways. And this is one that I like to finish out with. Yes, learning experiences is something that's different. And so, but I would challenge everybody, very similar to what Sam says. I always say, different isn't always better, but better is always different. And if you're shooting for better, you're gonna have something to do that's different. So, best of luck to everybody out there on that.
All right, thanks for your thoughts. Enjoyed having you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Well, hopefully we've rescued the learner experience from the buzzword fate today. I'd like to thank our guests again, Tom Tonkin of Cornerstone On Demand and Sam Herring of Intrepid by VitalSource. You can find more information on this topic by searching for learner experience on trainingindustry.com. And of course, you can find more episodes of our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or by searching for podcasts on our website. Thanks for listening.
If you have feedback about this episode or would like to suggest a topic for a future program, email us at info@trainingindustry.com or use the contact us page at trainingindustry.com. Thanks for listening to the Training Industry Podcast.